Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. New year, new decade. Be future ready with Zurich, the power behind your pension.
Now we're going to stay with the murder of Keane Mulready Woods. Today, several voices have called for a special task force to be established to address issues of criminality, drug abuse and deprivation in Drogheda. Some have suggested as possible models the approaches used in recent years in Limerick and Dublin's northeast inner city. For more on this, I'm joined now by retired Detective Inspector Pat Murray, who served as a guard in Dundalk, Drogheda and North Dublin. He's the author of The Making of a Detective, Anna Quigley from the Citywide Drugs Crisis Campaign, and Professor Niamh Harrigan, sociologist and vice president of Mary Immaculate College in Limerick. Pat Murray, you know Drogheda, you know Dundalk, you know North Dublin very well. In your experience and during your years as a Garda, you will have encountered many elements of what we're talking about today. But how young are boys, and it is mainly boys, it appears, when they first get involved with drug gangs, and the why? Why do they get lured in?
Well, it's money. It's the lure of money. And they sometimes are young children as young as 12 and 13 who, let's say, are coming from backgrounds where they believe they don't have a good start in life, and they see their friends with money, and this is an easy, let's say, stepping stone to get on. I presented, court in Drogheda for 2 years, 3 days a week, and during that time I've seen a lot of juveniles come to court, and they were young guys who had got involved in drugs, who had been given drugs as a way of teasing them into the drug culture by gangs, and they were given the drugs on tick, and they had to pay it back, and of course, when they'd get up a drugs debt, they were asked for the money, and they couldn't, of course, pay it back. And they got into criminality then by breaking into cars or doing burglaries to get property and whatever to sell to pay back the drug debt. But the drug debt was never paid back. And if a young guy got into a debt of €500, the drugs gang would say, well, that we've just put that €500 is now €5,000 yours. Now, there's no way a young chap would have any of that type of money. And these gangs would go to the parents, call to the doors of these young people and knock on the door and threaten the parents, your son owes us 5,000, you better pay up or else. And that's the type of intimidation that goes on with these gangs, you know. So you have people then who have their cars burned out or their houses stoned or whatever, like, you know, as an intimidation. That's what these gangs are all about. And when young people get involved in gangs, they don't realise what's at the end of it for them.
Stay with us there, Pat, and I'll bring Anna Quigley in. Anna, what Pat is saying, that description of children, some as young as 12 or 13, getting drawn into the drugs trade, does that ring true with your experience of what happens as well?
Yeah, but it's important, Mary, to, first of all, I just want to say, send deepest sympathies to Kian's family. It's beyond thinking about what they're going through. So our deepest sympathies to them. The first point I want to make, I mean, obviously we can look at the individual experience, but from our point of view, what we need to look at too is the communities where the drug trade has become embedded. Like when we started working 20 something years ago, people in the community still believed that drugs was something that we could get rid of, that we could solve the problem, that eventually there'd be no drugs and everybody could move on. And of course, the young people that were growing up today, like they've grown up in these communities through a time when the communities never have been drug free or never have had not had a drugs trade. So to them, it's completely normal. We have to be clear, because a lot of people pass judgment on these young people, but there's only certain communities in this country where young people are faced with that as an economic option. Most young people in this country aren't faced that. So it's important to say that about the community setting. And we did do a piece of work last year with youth projects, community youth projects that are working with young people who are involved in the drugs trade. And clearly they were saying some of them are making an economic decision because, as has been said, they're the money. And these are not stupid young people. Like, they've heard the message about stay on at school and you'll do better. A lot of them have stayed on at school, but then they see, well, what are the options now? You know, a 0 hours, low pay job. And they see the money it's available in the drugs trade and they make their choice. Now, obviously, there are some vulnerable young people, as has been said, too, who get drawn in, and then with the credit debit issue, debt issue, people get drawn in as well. But I think it is really important that, obviously, you know, we need to focus on the specific young people in responding to them. But we can't look at this problem unless we ask ourselves the question, well, how come it's in certain communities that this is an option for young people when it isn't in most? And that's a question for all of us, I think.
So, Anna, is it too simplistic to say that they're it's part of it, but it's not the whole story, that they're attracted to it because they see their mate stepping out of a posh car with a Rolex on his wrist, or strutting down the street with designer clothes head to toe? That's part of it. It's not the whole picture.
Yeah, it's part of it. Exactly. And with all these things, Mary, like, there isn't one explanation for anything. Yeah. There's all kind of different reasons. But again, the likelihood of a young person getting involved at this level in the drugs trade, as I say, is much greater in some communities. And again, like, people do make the point that anyone from any background can be using drugs, which is absolutely true. But we still see the worst damage is done to people in the most disadvantaged areas, and particularly in terms of these young men who are being murdered. The vast majority of them are coming from a more disadvantaged community. So we have to ask ourselves a question around that. And as part of the reason, I suppose, some of the major frustration we've had in the past year, we've been trying to highlight, like, the difficulties that the drug task forces that are already there, and there are task forces in the two areas we're talking about, the difficulties they're facing in trying to carry out their role in responding to the drug problem. Because we know, like, we link in with the community reps and the community drug projects and the family support projects and network in those areas. And they are just, I mean, I'm in awe of them. They're just brilliant people. They're doing incredible work. Many of them have been doing it for many, many years. And some of those services are now struggling to survive. And what they do is the day after day after day stuff. That doesn't get attention, Mary. It doesn't get into the news. And if we're not supporting that kind of stuff, then that's part of you know,
why we get
letting,
to where we
yeah,
are
letting
now.
The conditions but, grow. And it's worth saying that those projects were cut between 2007 and 2014, and they haven't had their core budgets restored at all. I don't know if there's any other funding stream.
I just want to go back to Pat, because it is one thing to talk about drugs and the intimidation and what follows, but the violence, Pat, of the level that we've seen recently, and the violence meted out to Cian, that is of another level altogether. How do you explain it?
Yeah, it is an horrific crime, and it has crossed a line. I think most people, like, when they hear of murders or gangland murders, they'd say, well, let them kill themselves or that type of stuff, and they don't pay much attention. But this is a young guy, 17 years of age, who has been deliberately abducted, I'm sure was threatened, murdered, cut up and dumped. And that brings a level of disrespect that it's very hard to explain. But I think, like, you know, the murder itself, and I mentioned it in my book as well about sentencing and that, and the people who are responsible for this type of crime, if they are convicted, should never be released. I think that would be a deterrent for these type of criminals. You know, it's a tit-for-tat type of scenario, and you sort of hold your breath and say, well, what's next? Like, what could happen next that will sort of shock?
And that is the fear now, and people holding their breaths in fear. Niamh Harrigan, you're the editor of Understanding Limerick. The other model of state intervention that people are citing is that of Limerick, and Limerick had a most dreadful problem. What are the lessons, and are they applicable to Drogheda?
Yes, Maria, I think in many ways the lessons from Limerick are actually more applicable to Drogheda than they have been to the feuding that's been going on in Dublin for two reasons. First of all, part of the criminal justice response in Limerick was very much to focus, and it goes back to Anna's point there about communities. It was very much to focus, both in terms of supports, but also in terms of criminal justice, to focus on specific communities. And in Drogheda, again, there's specific neighbourhoods that are involved here, so you can have that kind of territorial-based response, which was much more difficult in Dublin because it was kind of diffuse in the middle of a capital city. The second thing that, again, that the key actors in the future Cood and Drogheda are local families, and therefore, again, they're there, and they're there to kind of be confronted, essentially, whereas in the Dublin context, many of the key actors were actually outside the state, so they were beyond the reach of the guards. So there's a lot of lessons to be learned and strategies to be used. Essentially, I suppose what we saw happening in Limerick was a spectrum of strategies going from very hard boundary setting of the type that we're seeing happening in Drogheda right now, which is things like armed response, CCTV. Certainly, one of the areas in Limerick which proved very successful and delivered results in the long term was actually community policing and building up greater relationships between families and the Gardaí. But that was only the start of the spectrum, and then it moved down to strategies, particularly youth diversion strategies and intervention strategies, and then way down right to the 0 to 5 age group, where you had supports coming in for parents at very, very early stages. But I think a critical factor to remember here, Mary, is that the resources devoted to Limerick regeneration, it was a budget over of 300 million. And that, you know, there was 100 Gardaí put into Limerick City to deal with the feud. Like, that's the level of resourcing that you're talking about. And those Gardaí were not just kind of dumped on the street, so to speak. There were parts of a range of very specific targeted responses that went after various dimensions. And the feud in Drogheda is very like the Limerick feud in the sense that it has a drugs basis and it has a territorial piece to it, but also it has evolved into a feud for itself. And I think this is very evident in the type of murder that it was, is that there's a symbolic piece to it. It's not just about eliminating somebody. It's about using that to demonstrate to others and to put fear into others. And of course, social media has been used in a way now that hadn't been used in Limerick. Yeah. But that's a critical piece that has to be challenged, really, in order to do the criminal justice response.
Anna, you said earlier, you know, why does this happen in some communities and not in other communities? You know, why is it in Dublin northeast inner city, for example, and perhaps not in some of Dublin's leafier suburbs? And, you know, some listeners might say as well, when they hear stories about criminal feuds, rightly or wrongly, they might think that these incidents are nothing to do with them. But you would disagree with that, I'm sure, and just tell me why it has something to do with them and why it does affect them.
Well, of course it does, because again, in the end of the day, it's about what kind of a society. I mean, we're now a society where a 17-year-old young man has been treated like this, and nobody in this society should tolerate that. We should all, as a society, say that is not good enough. We have to get past the place. And it is a big part of the stigma that surrounds drugs. I mean, this is an issue that comes up a lot of time. There is still a huge stigma attached to it. That's become even more difficult with the levels of intimidation and so on, because years ago we would have seen a lot more people from communities coming out to respond to drug-related stuff. And a lot of people won't do it now because they're afraid. But again, from the highest level, we need to see political leadership in saying that this is it. It became a crisis when Veronica Guerin was murdered, quite rightly. But every citizen of the state has to have equal value. And I would just hope, I mean, I have to say, based on my experience, I find it hard to be optimistic, but I would hope in some way that this might be a wake-up call. I mean, look at it. We have 786 drug-related deaths in 2017. 786. I don't know the exact number of young men who've been shot dead in the last few years, but it's a very significant number. Does anybody really think if that was happening in the better-off areas of this country that there wouldn't be a major, major political response to it? I don't think so. And we all have to ask ourselves about that, particularly in an election when politicians come around. This is your problem. If you're happy to live in a society where this happens to a youngster of 17, where his family is put through this torture, if you're okay with that being part of Irish life, well, you know, that's a judgment on you. And if you're not, please see that we have to respond to this.
Right.
We have to respond to this by obviously a whole range of things. Yes, absolutely, we need the criminal response. Absolutely, 100%. People need to be protected. But again, as Niamh is saying there, we need a much broader community response, and people need to be supported in their own areas. Because in the end of the day, that's where the greatest fear and terror
is. I'm going to leave you with the final words. Thank you very much, Anna Quigley, Pat Murray and Niamh Harrigan.